this is the fifth lecture on the 1500s of Europe. Huh?
16th of Teves.
16th of Teves, okay. So we are, the last 2 weeks we were discussing Rav Yozelman of Rosheim, who was the Shtadlan of the Jewish people. And he came in at he was overlapping, you know, issues that were happening, the issues of his day that he had to help the Jews with. Some of them had to do with this, Martin Luther and his new religion, so to speak, that was coming up, that was coming in. So, So Martin Luther was the that's really what we're going to be discussing tonight. This person by the name of Martin Luther, and I guess he came in at the right time, at the right place, and before you know it, the church had a very, very big issue that they had to deal with, and a lot's going on in Europe, and of course, among everything else, the Jews themselves are going to be caught in the middle of this. But just let's going a little bit further, but just into it. The Reformation, what it's called, is when the attack on the church, or the Reformation is really meaning the reforming of the church, really came at a time when we were discussing previously was the Renaissance. The Renaissance is a time of history that there was a people were waking up and they wanted more control of their lives, and they were interested more in knowledge and technology, and it was a it was a the in thing is to start to be more interested in more the roots and in ancient history, and to learn from them and to learn from everybody. So once you had this in the air, this culture in the air to start, so it was the time was ripe when Martin Luther is going to put forth a few ideas or criticisms on the church, and it's going to make its way around, and all of the people are going to say, maybe, we could hear that. And it's going to start as you could see, a reformation or a protest as Protestant. So, but basically, is it in just one very short idea, the Reformation was the criticism of the Roman Catholic Church, that was the church in Rome, in Italy, and led to a new religion called, religious movement called Protestant Reformation. And the Protestant Reformation eventually is going to break off into other branches. But that's really what it was. It started off as criticism. Now, it really started off where, it really started off that everybody who was criticizing the church, they didn't want to make a new religion. Everybody who made criticisms, and Martin Luther was not the first, well, they wanted to reform the church. They wanted the church to fix itself up. And the history of the church was, is anybody that criticized the church was silenced. He was either excommunicated or worse. He could have even been killed. Depends how influential they were. They were called a heretic because you're going against the church. And it was very, very hard as an individual.
Did they have their own police and stuff like that?
Great question. Well, I guess I would imagine, first of all, they did have their own army. The Pope did have an army.
Wow.
But I don't think they would hear somebody out in the middle of the farms of France, they'd send the army out to him. But they had their own ways. You know, the church in Italy had connections to all the churches all over Europe. So if you had a priest in some, church somewhere, and he sends a message, that there's somebody here causing trouble, so the priest over there on the local level would have been able to take care of it. And if he couldn't, so then whoever his superior was, I don't know if it's a bishop, I don't know what, however, the hierarchy, I'm not sure how that worked. And if they couldn't take care of it, there was a relationship with the local... The local leader, the local the king or the emperor or the duke or the knight, they're all working together here. It was the One they were working together. Well, we'll see in a second. In the early 1500s. Okay, what were some of the criticisms? The Roman Catholic Church was influential, extravagant, and worldly. I mean, they were power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. So they were getting so much money, and they were just spending, crazy amounts, and they were living a very worldly, gashmius life, and they also started to become less frum, like we would call it. They were just started. I mean, the priests and the Pope and people in Rome started, like, they weren't even, they were very barely religious. So it's very interesting when you're the head of the church and you're not acting like you should in a moral sense. Yeah.
So just in my mind, for like approximately 1,000 years, there was only one centralized church. There was not like today where, you know, we know different sects or whatever. There was only one church.
Well, it was one centralized church, the Roman Catholic Church, which is for the West. There was the Eastern Orthodox Church. That was with the split with the Roman Empire, with the West and the East. So this Roman Catholic Church was for the West. The East ended up having the Orthodox Church, or the Greek Orthodox Church, or the Russian Orthodox Church. But the church that was for the East was a little different. There were differences between the two. The Eastern Orthodox churches were more into saints. They were more into rituals, and they would have pictures. They would have like bones of a saint put into a picture. That was more on the Eastern. The Western was more, I guess, philosophical. It was more. Not so much doing things like pictures and stuff, but more, intellectual. That's what I'm looking for. Okay, so what happened is okay. So they were living becoming very worldly, and people, they'd go to Rome, and they'd be ola regal, I guess, and they'd come to Rome and they'd see what's going on here. You know, here they were all out. Everybody is living a life of the church. You know, from the churches, they're all telling the people to live an otherworldly life and don't get too involved in this world. And everything is for the next world. And you shouldn't, don't be too earthly and worldly. And then they went to Rome and they saw what was going on there. And there was inconsistency. Plus the priests themselves were not behaving in the way that they should. So financially, people's respect for priests, monks, popes, they were all weakening. They saw the way they act. Okay, also there was heavy taxation. Now, what really got the ball rolling was the following. Before we get to Martin Luther, was the Rome, the Pope, the Vatican was building at that time St. Peter's Basilica. I'll show you a picture of this. This is like, oh, unreal what they were building. Now, when you build these buildings, you need money, right? So how do you get money? How do you get people to, you get up in shul, a mishabeirach will get you X amount of money, you have an appeal, a speaker. So they went for like this. The Pope Leo X came up with this idea of selling indulgences. Now, what's indulgences? Now, after everybody dies, it's very, like, Judaism and Christianity, they have totally a different view of everybody. We believe Kol Yisrael Yeshlem Chelek LeOlam Haba. Everybody, all Jews, or all people, are inherently good. We all have a neshama. We're all worthy, and we have a place in Olam Haba. We can only lose it. The Goyim, on the other hand, held that people are inherently evil and bad, and all from Adam and the sin with the apple, with the tree Eitz HaChayim. It's again, I'm being very overly simple on this. I'm not into it. I don't know, but basically, all people are evil and bad, and they need the church. We'll see how this is going to. There's going to be a little bit of a difference here between Martin Luther and the Pope, but basically you need the church to save you, you know. And very often they had their saints, which did good things in order to save humanity from damnation, right? And that's what that was. Yashka was. He died for everybody's sins, and from then in the future, however, maybe if you say it quick enough, you can get it by everybody. So, that's what they believed in. That's what they held. And you have to go to church, and the church and the Pope, they're all there to help you get out of Gehenna. So, what Leo the 10th wanted to do is they wanted to sell these indulgences. Now, what's an indulgence? Indulgences is like a pass that says get out of Gehenna free, right? Pre-monopoly, right? Instead of get out of jail free card, it was a get out of Gehenna free card. And how did you get it? So you got it by giving money to the church, basically, you know, and the church wrote up a contract. Oh, I'll just talk about it a little bit more. And that was such a terrible abuse. Okay, and they believed instead, you know, you should really go to the Gehenna, and that's where people did go to if they had sins. Picture of Leo the 10th, and this is a copy of the sale of indulgences. This is what they would go, and people would sign it. They'd go to towns, and people would pay for these for themselves, and they could get it for their children, and they can get it for their grandchildren. They could get it for the whole family. Buy one for each, you know. And that was what they were doing. So this is what the churches were doing in the early 1500s when they were building St. Peter's Basilica. They were trying to raise money, and one of the methods they were using was the sale of indulgences. Okay, this is St. Peter's Basilica. Look at this monstrosity. Now, this is what they were trying to build in the early 1500s. I think it was 1509, 1510. Probably a little later, probably 1517. Anyway, this is what it is now. You see these little things of people, I see, with this big, massive thing. So they needed funding for this. I mean, I'm assuming it goes all the way here, and this is all part of it here. And then this, like, I don't see where this thing ends, you know? I just can't believe. They needed a lot of money. And that's what they were doing. They were going around Europe trying to get people to pay for it. How do you get people to pay? You sign this, you don't go to Gehenna, and we get a... Now, the indulgences, there was a precedent for indulgences by the Crusades, because the Pope said anybody that would go on a crusade, you know, they would be spared going to Gehenna. They got this get out of Gehenna free card, but that made sense. You know, you're giving up your life, you're doing something, a major thing, you're going to war, you're going halfway across the world to go ahead and fight the infidel and the non-believer, and that was you doing such a great act that they could understand it. But just for some money, you're going to sign a piece of paper, and you're going to get so that was a very abuse of power. Now earlier there were some reformers, earlier people that had criticism against the church and really wanted to reform the church. One was John Wycliffe. One was Jan Hus, and the Hussites in France. And he had a little bit of a backing. But mainly they had to go underground. They were persecuted by the church. The church would send out these Dominican friars and the Franciscan friars, and these were groups of people, of monks that were going out making sure that everybody believed in the party line. So, you know, if you didn't believe in the party line, you were a heretic and you could be burnt on the stake or whatever they did to them. So these were two earlier reformers, but their criticism of the church and their followers were mainly localized. But then you come to Martin Luther. Okay, Martin Luther he did in 1517 is when the Protestant Reformation happened, and the way it started with Martin Luther himself when he started growing up, he was first, I think his father wanted him to be, or he started going into law, but he realized law wasn't for him. So then he went into the church, and he was a monk for 3 years in the church, and then afterwards he went down to Rome. And when he went down, he had his own thoughts. He was a very independent thinker. He went down to Rome, and he saw what was going on in Rome, and it was like, he said, this is crazy. This is not what we're supposed to be doing. This is, the opulence, everything, the abuse of power and money and all the morality. He was very against it. And then when he came back, he particularly, when they came back and they were starting to sell indulgences, I think for Martin Luther, that was like the straw that broke the camel's back. What he did is he took these, it's called the 95 Theses, and he wrote up something. He happened to have written it up in Latin, and he put it on the door of the Wittenberg Church. And that's what he did. And in these 95 theses, he wrote all his criticisms of what he believed the churches were doing. And it was, he wrote it, it was not uncommon for people to do this. If you wanted to spark a debate on the door of the church, you would put up what you have in mind, or what's bothering you. This was it was a common practice, and it was what happened with Martin Luther is you have to realize the Gutenberg printing press had just started making its way around. So in the beginning of the 1500s, you had these printing presses all over. So they took his 95 theses and they copied it and they distributed it. And now people started reading it and they said, you know what? Some of this really makes sense. Some of them make sense. This is Martin Luther. This is the door of the Wittenberg Castle Church that he put it on. This is like, I guess, some sort of a picture of what it would have looked like. Okay, so now what happened is after this, it was still inside the church at this point. Still, Martin Luther didn't say, "Oh, that's it. I'm breaking from the church. I'm on my own." He was debating within the church. He wanted to change the church. He wanted the church to fix itself up. He saw himself as a nice Catholic. So then he started coming up with his own ideas, and one big idea was that God, a person can't do tshuva. He says that a person won't be, tshuva is not good enough. What will save a person is faith. That's one thing. And the other thing that really would go against what the church would believe is that the head of the church, only head of church was Yashka and not the Pope. So the Pope is not really the head of the church. Well, if you don't think the Pope is the head of the church, then what do I need Rome for? Like, why would I send them all their support and everything? So that would be very, very not good for business. So you definitely would not want, you definitely would not want that. So then that brought him really up against the church. I'm sorry, you were.
I don't understand. I understood it the opposite, that the church wanted was just faith without the deeds, and the reform insisted on.
Okay, I'm.
Actually,
you know. I thought it the other way. Okay, we'll see. I'm not sure.
Indulgence means really that you,
It makes sense. Indulgences means that just faith, but indulgences mean that the church had the power to fix things up. We have a say of what's up there. We determine if you go to.
I never understood it to be the church.
In terms of faith,
insistent on the good
deeds.
Work.
Okay, I'm not sure. I think it is this way, but I'm not. If you're telling me it isn't, well, I'll check up into it. Okay. Anyway, just going a little further. So, Luther really wanted people to be on their own. The Christians could learn on their own. They could decide on their own. And they should learn the the Bible on their own. By the way, the Bible in church, it was on the banned list of books. Because they didn't want people reading the Bible, only their priests. So they try to keep the Bible only printed in Latin and not any other languages. And they wanted, because they wanted, you know, we'll tell you what the Bible says and we'll tell you what you should be doing. That's the control that the church wanted over the people. So Martin Luther said, no, that's not, you know, again, the Pope's not in charge of everything. It was all under Yashka, and we want, you know, everybody could be their own boss and everybody could decide for their own. Everybody should learn on their own. And therefore, everybody, you know, should be able to read the Bible on their own. And not only that, but actually Luther actually translated a Bible into German. Once you know you got art school working for you, then more people are able to read the Bible, and they could find out things for themselves. Which is very matim. It worked out very nice because again, you're talking about the time of the Renaissance, and people are interested in their own learning. They're interested in finding out things for themselves. They're interested in ancient wisdom, and now you're putting, Bible is pretty ancient. It's pretty back there, you know, out there, and the Germans are able to read the Bible on their own. This is a copy of what Luther's Bible, what he published. This was a copy. Well, in 1520, so that all happened in 1517. By 3 years later, the church, Leo X, expelled Luther from the church. In 1521, the Holy Roman Emperor Charles V summoned him to appear. Now, that was a summons he could not refuse. Again, Charles V was very Catholic. You know, he came from Spain, right? And, you know, from Spain and Germany, he was the king at the time of Spain and Germany all at the same time. He's very, 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 very Catholic. And, you know, so he calls in Luther and he tells him, listen, I want you to change your opinions. And Luther, he says, nope, refuses to recant. He still is holding what he believes. And then basically the emperor hands out something called the Edict of Worms and declares Luther to be an outlaw. Luther has to run for his life. And he ends up in some noble's castle somewhere, hiding away for about another few years, writing his books, his ideas, his thoughts. And, okay, now what's happening is in Europe is the princes are all like starting to, you know, there's always tension with the church, right? A little bit more with Germany than with the other countries. See, Germany, England and France had one king, and they were pretty powerful, and they were the controllers of those countries. Germany never had that. Germany had all these little princes, princes of little places. They had like hundreds of princes. Hundreds of these principalities. So now these princes, they're always at odds with the church. The church wants something, and they may want something else. But now that they have reason to be against the church, so they started, if they took the side of Martin Luther, then the church property that was in their area, their land that they owned, that's it. They took it for themselves. That's it. No more church. We're no longer part of you, and we're gonna be following Martin Luther, which I mean the church was the largest land owner of Europe. In Europe, it was the church, you know, all the church buildings and areas that they bought. Charles V tried to suppress them, but there was a protest from all the princes. They were not so eager to follow the church. If you want to bring it down to that, I'm sure it's true in many cases, and for everybody at some level, is at that point the princes felt it was in their best interest, they would gain more if they went against the church at this point than if they followed the church, followed everything. They had what to gain. A lot of them had a lot to gain, especially financially. So it was, you know, they would want to go against. But now Charles the Fifth, who's the emperor, is now going up against a lot of the princes. So it caused for lots of, like, little wars and skirmishes. And okay, so and that was little these issues that we're going to have. So Charles is going to have to call another meeting, and he's going to have to say, "All right, that's it. We got to call the keep the peace here, because the place in Germany where they were just ready to killing each other, just on you know Christianity against Protestants." This is all the green. This is all what Charles V. This was all under the Habsburgs. Not only Charles V, but the House of the Habsburgs at this point owned all this land. So it was a tremendous. You know, Charles V had Germany here and Spain. And Spain at that point had South Italy. So it was like he himself was just like such a massive ruler. He was so the most powerful ruler that there was. So, besides in Germany, you had this these changes going on all over. So again, so at some point, they once they kicked Martin Luther out, so Martin Luther decided on his own. That's it. I'm going in for business for myself, and that's basically what he did. And that's the Protestant is means the protest. That's and he started his basically his own religion, or an offshoot of it. And he was in, mainly in Germany. He had a lot of backing from the princes and Lutheranism, or that was his. Now, you're going to see the same thing was happening all over Europe. Mm-hmm. In the Swiss, so a person by the name of Ulrich Zwingli, and he also had this, he was also had his ideas against the church. I guess once Martin Luther started and it started gaining ground, other people also were coming out. And he also came into, it was a John Calvin that came to the Swiss also. John Calvin started in France, and he came up, he met up with Erasmus, who was a Renaissance humanist, and a supporter, and he supported Luther. Eventually, he had little arguments, you know, in certain things about religion, so he started on his own. And what the thing by... What was very interesting about Swiss is that they had what I guess we would call a theocracy. It wasn't just the government, the church was the government. In other words, the church determined, the government determined what you were going to do. And that's in Geneva, in Swiss, for I guess a short time, that's the way it was. And they were very strict, and they had very, like, I guess, high standards, or you had to be very frum to do things, and they enforced you to keep like a nice, good Christian. And they told you exactly what they had to do. That was the government. And that was John Calvin and Zwingli, and that was in Swiss. Okay, now what happened in Scotland and England? So in Scotland, you had a person by the name of John Knox. I'm not sure he had, I don't know what an Anabaptist is. I got into it, but he had his way of understanding. That was in Scotland. This over here is some like chart of where they all came from. So you have this is Anglicanism, Lutheranism, and like this brought into the Puritans and Methodists, and over here Calvinism went into the Reformed churches and Presbyterianisms, and then out from the Puritans you had the Baptists, and then okay, whatever. It's, these are everything came from one another. Yeah.
Calvinism, if you could go back to that, even before, was he...
Him?
Was he saying that nothing you could do to...
Yeah. He believed in predestination. That means whoever was going to be saved is going to be saved. Whoever was not is not. And that's it. Nothing you can do.
Why would people want to join him?
I have the same question as you. I, you know, from reading 3-4 lines of this, I did not have time to start to go into what did Calvinism believe and start to reading what it all meant. I don't know. I don't understand. But I guess if you can follow what he wanted you to do, maybe it was a sign that you're one of the winners. You know, because look what I'm able to do. I must be from those that will be saved. I guess maybe that was it, people. I don't know. Great question. I had the same question. I did not stop, you know, into what each one believes in particulars. But they all had different offshoots of what they believed enough that they separated from Luther. right? So it was enough of a difference that they couldn't reconcile, or they didn't want to reconcile. Okay, this is interesting. Well, I wait till you get to England. Okay, now, what happened in England? So first in England, it really happened with King Henry VIII, right? That's all the songs and all the fun, you know, the jokes.
I'm Henry VIII,
yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so that this is the Henry VIII. So in 1509, he became king at 17, devout Catholic. He wrote against Luther and all his ideas, and he was known, he got a title, Defender of the Faith. Okay, he was like really, really good. The only thing is that's 1509, and 1526, I think it is, 1525. So he only had one child, Mary, and he was married. And he wanted a male heir. He felt that England with a one woman it won't be strong enough, and he wanted a male descendant. So the problem is, his marriage to Catherine, he wanted to have his marriage to Catherine, his wife, annulled. I guess he didn't believe in divorces. So if you can't divorce your wife, you annul it means you're never really married to begin with. And he went to the Pope and he wanted an annulment. See, the problem was is Catherine, his brother, was Charles V. So if the Pope would give an annulment to Catherine for King Henry, he'd run into problems with King Charles. So who do you side with, you know? So I guess he sided with King Charles, and he refused to give King Henry the annulment. So what did King Henry do? Switch religions. What would anybody else do, you know? You could be a defender of the faith, but listen, you know, that's as long as we're on the same side. Like, I can get my annulment, you know. But if I can't get my annulment, so he decided to go again, and he basically, at that point, he fell in, he met up with Anne Boleyn, I don't know what her name is. So he married her. I don't know, did she give him a male heir? I don't even know. Is he the one that had a few wives? I don't know what the end of the story is with King Henry VIII. But what we do know is that King Henry VIII and Catherine, and then again Catherine, and that's Clement and Anne Boleyn. Okay, what ended up happening is he switches side, and he becomes like a Lutheran, or he becomes a Protestant. Not necessarily what Luther fully believes in, but the idea took hold. That's it. He's now along the lines of Lutheran, so he's able to get his annulment or divorce, and he makes himself head of the Church of England. I don't know how you're able to do that. Again, the way we come from is the Rosh Yeshiva, the guy who can give the best shiur, the one who's the mashgiach is like the one who is such a model person, who's that's a mashgiach and a rav and a rebbe and a reshiva. They're all on a higher level by us. I don't know. All of a sudden, King Henry decides, okay, that's it. I'm in charge here. I'm the head of the church. So I don't exactly know how that works, but he did it, and everything changes. And they go from, he closed Catholic monasteries. Now, if you want to get your dukes and your nobles and your, you know, and your, everybody on your side, so what you do is you take all the Catholic churches and you just give it to your nobles as gifts, you know. That's it. The Catholic Church won't be needing these anymore, right? So why don't you just, you know, if you're with me, why don't you just take the, take it, it's yours, you know, new religion. I guess that's how you were able to get public support for his split. Okay, that's what happened. They secretly got married. The marriage to Catherine was annulled. She gave birth to a daughter, Elizabeth. Okay, I'm not sure if he ended up with his male heir, or did he go through a few wives?
He had one male heir, but he died young.
Yeah, died young, kid. Something like that, yeah. So after all that, just wasn't in for him. Okay, but he ended up, listen, at least he was the head of the church. You know. Okay, yeah, so next to supremacy, he's the head of the Church of England. Protestants would go through varying levels of support with Henry's heirs. So his just following it through. So it stayed Protestant, and then there was somebody that wanted to change back, and that didn't last too long, and then they changed back to Protestant. It ended up being Protestant, but for a short time it was wavering back and forth. And whoever waved back and forth, if you decided you were going to be more on the Christian side than the Protestant side, it's mostly because of what your level of support would be. If you felt that you're better off on the Protestant side, then that's what they would follow. That's really more, it says a lot about their commitment, or at least the way we would understand what their commitment would be. Just a little, these are the Anglican Calvinists over here. Lutheran was mainly Norway, Sweden, and Northern Germany. Okay, and that's, okay. What do we have? We have the, okay, so now already the church, you got the church's attention. Because when they see everything going, everybody's leaving, and everybody's has real criticisms, and the church has already decided, okay, let's deal with it. But it probably was at some point they decided, okay, they're going to really go ahead and deal with the issues that they had. So different ways they dealt with it. One is with these Jesuits. Now, the Jesuits they decided to change the church with education. That was, I think, one of their main things. They made societies, different types of services. They tried the religious orders, and they worked to reform the church. I believe they were very into education. You also had Loyola, Ignatius Loyola. He also was trying to reform the church from within. He was also like a Jesuit, I think. Again, I'm not so familiar, but he was also a reformer of the church from within, not from without. And again, Loyola was on education, and that's how they would stop the Protestant Reformation. So they would establish mission schools and universities. And basically that was the way they kept the Christian church strong, and meaning strong, meaning in a moral sense, and also to get more people, because now you had all these missions going out and teaching for Christianity and not teaching for, so the new people or new blood, so to speak, or new areas would become more Christian than they would become more Protestant. Right, not Christian. I'm saying Catholic. I'm sorry. If I said Christian, I meant Catholic. Right. So, church was Catholic, and they were Protestants. They were all Christian. Right. I misspoke. Okay. Saint Ignatius of Loyola, and I know that's why. I think this is Boston College. Is Loyola. It's a Jesuit. So even in the New World, the Jesuits made it even into the New World. They were missionizing and in the Americas. Okay, so the church decided they made a Council of Trent, and that's where they had to define, okay, who are we? What are we changing? What's in and what's out? So the Pope Paul III in 1545, again, this has been since 1509, 1517 is when he started, Martin Luther put the 95 theses on. In 1521 is when he was told by Charles V to recant. 1529 he was then put in cherem, but 1529 is when Charles V and all of the princes came up with some sort of an agreement that everybody could be either Luther, or you could be Catholic. Okay, those two religions are in, and basically they came up with some sort of an arrangement. Everybody could be anything they wanted to be, but you can't stop anybody else, and let's keep the peace that way. And ended up more in the north of Germany was more Protestant, more in the south of Germany, I guess closer to Italy, was more Catholic. Okay, so that was in 1529. About 16 years later, in 1545, okay, the church, I guess, has been building to this. It was a number of years until they got this going. Okay, so they addressed abuses. Reforms addressed corruption of clergy, and they had to put a stop on it. They said, I guess, whatever checks and balances, that clergy is not just able to take all their money and do whatever they want. And okay, training of priests were regulated. How are we going to... They had complaints that they had priests in areas that they were ignorant. So if you're dealing with an ignorant population, it's not so bad. But now that we're in the Renaissance and people are becoming more learned and understanding, and you can't have priests that don't know anything. So they were the training of priests and reforms. Financial abuses were curbed. And, of course, the sales of indulgences were abolished. That's it. They realized that was a bad idea. I mean, and then that was totally taken away. Rejected the Protestants' emphasis of self-discipline, individual faith, and they felt that the church is you need the ceremonies of the church and you need the church, and okay, and there was no compromise between Catholics and Protestants. Catholics, they were machazik themselves and went out and they had the infrastructure, they had their the churches and everything in place, so they had to just now re-energize themselves to, once they made their reforms, to go ahead and put their reforms into action. Jesuit schools expanded, scope church worldwide, Renaissance women took religious orders, more and more active roles. So each one is now doing more kiruv to try to keep their, keep their part more popular or stronger. Pope Paul III, the Council of Trent. These were very active women that were very helpful in the church. Now, one of the things also that they did is an Inquisition. Because of this, and this is more a little bit what it had to do with the Jews, is now that the Protestants were trying to hold on to their own, and the Catholics were trying to holding on to their own, so they became a lot less tolerable of heresy of anybody else that's not holding the two lines, right? So if you're in the Lutheran camp, okay, look, what can we do? Lutheran camp, that's okay. But if you're not in the Lutheran camp and you're not in the Catholic camp, then why not? We want you to hold the party line. So, and that affected, I guess, all these smaller denominations and the Jews, because now the Jews are more going to be more strict with the Jews, because each one wanted to define they're better than the other. So once I have to fight for my own, that means everybody else is wrong, right? If I'm right and you're wrong, then why am I not fighting the Jews? Well, they're wrong also, so I have to fight against everybody equally. So again, that was now the new momentum. So also, what happened is they were I don't know if they believe. Well, I don't know if this was a real thing that witches started coming up, coming into, or they were just afraid of everybody and anything, and they started calling people witches. I didn't look into that so much, but this is the time of the period where there were witch hunts. And this witch hunt is going to, make its way to the New World, Salem, and the witch hunts all over there. But this is where it would, this is where people were afraid of witches. I guess, again, is it some superstition? Were people doing it? I don't know. But that's what started. Spanish Inquisition. So now, again, we mentioned before that way back in Portugal, so somehow they were able to keep the Inquisition out of Portugal for a long time. So in 1496, the King Jao was going to be married to the daughter of Ferdinand and Isabel, the daughter of Isabel, and the terms of the Tenaim was you got to kick out all your Jews. So he forcibly converted all the Jews in Portugal. He didn't want them to leave, but he didn't want to, you know, he was stuck. You know, he wanted to marry because he had that worked out and had his wife lived and he had an heir. His kid would have been king of Spain and Portugal. You know, that's what happened. So he was very much into the shidduch, but he didn't want to lose his Jews. So basically what he did is he forced all the Jews. He said to the Jews, any Jews that wants to leave, you have to come into Lisbon. And in Lisbon, he tricked them all and forcibly converted them. He locked them up in a room for 3 days until they all, you know, decided to convert. He took away their children, unspeakable things. But he said after he forcibly converted them, he says, all right, that's it. No ask, no tell, right? Well, what do we do in the army today? Right? No ask, don't ask, don't tell. That's it. And so the Jews in Portugal, he didn't let them leave. So that's the way they were. They were, you know, I guess secret Jews. All the Murano Converso stories, most of them really happened in Portugal. So why am I bringing this up is because at this point, while this was going on with the Protestants and the Catholics, so the Inquisition started getting strong and they introduced the Inquisition in Portugal as well around this time. Again, because you want to strengthen the Catholic Church. That's one area where the Catholic Church, that's one where the Jews were affected most. They came up with an index of forbidden books. Okay, accounts of torture, execution. Okay, so they really became less tolerable, really, after all this. Okay, religions in the 1600s. Okay, so we basically had, I think basically that is the, Catholics gained the momentum as the Counter-Reformation. Jesuits influenced, their influence came into North America as well. Protestants broke away from Catholic Church, split into many factions, and religious turmoil increased. As a matter of fact, from 1618, there's going to be a 30-year war in Germany. And this 30-year war is going to be a very direct result of a war between the Protestants and the Catholics. There was also another war, which you mentioned last week, was the Peasants' War. And when Lutheranism started coming around, and people should think for themselves and be for themselves, so the peasants started rebelling against the nobles. And they thought they would get support from Luther, but they didn't. And it ended very, very poorly, very bad for the peasants. They were killed in the thousands, in the tens of thousands. They were finally put with the armies of the nobles. They were just put out. We mentioned this because Joselman, Joselman of Rosheim, he actually went into the area where the leader was, and he begged them. Pleaded to them. He told them, "Don't attack Jews. It's not in your best interest to take the Jews' money away." You know, it's, and he got some sort of an agreement from them at that point. That was,
you just answered my question. Uh-huh. I was going to ask you if the Protestants proselytized the Jews like the Catholics. You know, if you don't convert, then
okay.
They
so
do
I
that.
Was. It's a great question. Okay, this also is even among the Protestants themselves. But to answer your question, I guess I was really probably going to save it for next week.
Okay.
Start talking about it now. I have to. Is the Luther thought at first he would be able to get the Jews on his side. He figured, of course, the Jews are not becoming Catholic because of all the abuses of the Catholic Church and how the Catholics treat the Jews. Of course they wouldn't become Catholics. So, but if now that I'm coming up with a new religion and everything is, you know, much better, of course the Jews would want to become Lutherans, Protestants, you know, they'll follow me. And he put out a pamphlet, something that said something like Joschko was a Jew, you know. And he put out a pamphlet very pro-Jewish. And when he saw basically that the Jews were not following him, they weren't becoming Christian because of the abuses of the Christian church. They just weren't becoming Christian because they didn't believe the whole thing. When he realized that, and about 30 years later, he put out another pamphlet, something like The Jews and Their Lies, you know. He's very, very anti-Semitic things he said. He actually mentioned at the end, Rav Yoselman of Rosh Hashanah had to go speak to some of these nobles. They weren't allowing Jews to even pass through their cities because they were following Martin Luther. So he had to go and he had to talk to them and convince them that, you know, Martin Luther is not correct. And he had to, they had to allow, you know, to fight for the Jews on that part. Also, I was going to get a list of things that Luther said about the Jews, what you should do. And there's about 10 things he said what you should do for the Jews. And that was like the basis for the Nazi, the German in the Holocaust, the basis of what Hitler, you know, and the Nazis did to the Jews. You go through the list. What he says we should do to the Jews, it's exactly what the Nazis did. So a lot of attitude and the dealings with the Jews all came from Martin Luther. Rav Yoselman calls him Luther Lo Tahar. Play on words. Okay. I think that should be persecution, hysteria, witchcraft. This is all because they were going against each other, so they were very intolerant, and they were trying to strengthen their own, and therefore they became more strict among themselves. What were the political effects is that basically there was more nationalism, less being part of the church, especially in Germany when they were becoming part of Lutheranism. So they have more separation of church and state and then becoming more nationalistic. That was a something that was going on. Religious wars. Okay, I'm not familiar, but there were these Italian wars all fighting between Spain and France, and somehow England got involved, and that was okay. I think any questions? I think that would be about it. This is Charles V, conflicts. Okay. Okay. Fine. Any questions? So basically, that's what he did. He started this new religion, so to speak, and it kept a competition against the Christians. It split into many factions. Lutheranism. It showed itself differently, whether it's in Germany, Swiss, England, and the church then had to go through a counter-reformation where they had to finally take a long, hard look at themselves and fix up what they were doing wrong. And that's it. From this time on, you're now going to have that competition between the Catholic Church and the Protestants. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Kol tov. Thank you.